we are actually staring the bankruptcy of the whole fiat currency system in the face. And that, I'm afraid, is where we are.
Here at Liberty and Finance, we're licensed brokers with Miles Franklin. We are standing by the inventory, ready to make sure you get what you need, even into the wee hours of night and on weekends, because preparedness doesn't stop. Call us 1-888-81-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-815-4237.
Welcome back to Liberty and Finance. We're always privileged to have this distinguished returning guest. Alistair McLeod, the head of research at goldmoney.com, is also a former bank director. He joins us this Tuesday, April 18th, 2023. Alistair, thank you for coming back on Liberty and Finance.
That's very much my pleasure, DK.
We've had you on several times in the past, and you've alerted us to increasing strains and illiquidity and risks in the currencies around the world and in the banking system and the international financial markets that are dependent on all of that. And more recently, you've just started to do some research into what would be trigger points for basically a flood of U.S. dollars, an imbalanced availability of U.S. dollars coming out. I guess before we get into the depth of the key findings of your most recent research on what those trigger points are likely to be, there was a rather controversial statement made by the president of Kenya about 2.5 weeks ago, saying that the people who, he said, for people who work numbers, I'm giving you free advice that those of you who are holding dollars, you shortly might go into losses. You'd better do what you must do because this market is going to be different in a couple of weeks. And then later he clarified he was not saying that Kenya was going to be dumping dollars, but that they're going to be doing trade in shillings rather than in dollars, and the dollar will become more available in coming weeks. In your research into what are possible trigger points for increased availability of U.S. dollars, can you tell us what his remarks indicate to you? And you have a special awareness about this. You said you were actually raised in Kenya?
Yes, I was, yes. I think the background to this is that Kenya is actually short of dollars. As I understand it, he has an agreement with the Saudis to import their oil in return for Kenya shillings. And this is a major breakthrough for a country like Kenya, whose currency is, I have to say, really rather weak. I should have looked up the exchange rate, but all I can tell you is that it has really lost purchasing power since we left in 1963, very, very substantially. And so this is not a currency which you or I, let alone Mohammed bin Salman, would take an exchange for oil. But I think there's a new wind blowing through Asia and a new understanding, and they're turning their back on the dollar. So I think that on that sort of basis, for really what is a very small customer for Saudi Arabia, that, you know, it's no skin off their nose to come to Kenya's aid, if you like, through lack of dollars. I don't know what else they might have extracted from Kenya in terms of promises or whatever, but I think that's the actual background to this. The one thing I wouldn't do is I wouldn't read into what he said that he's got any special knowledge about some sort of international attack on the dollar or whatever. I would discount that completely. It is important to understand the idiom, if you like, the way in which the East African politicians speak. They have a sense of humor, maybe. They would say things which in the West we would probably take more seriously than are taken by their audience. And I did have a look at the clip and everybody was laughing along with him, you know, hugely. So I think that's the spirit in which this really should be taken. I wouldn't read too much into it. But having said that, there is a very serious point underlining this, and that is that Saudi Arabia has turned its back on the dollar. It will obviously accept dollars. I mean, if you want to buy oil, want to pay in dollars, I'm sure they would be very happy to accommodate you. But the fact of the matter is that they are turning their back on America as well as the dollar. And it's worth bearing in mind that since Saudi Arabia turned its back on America, peace has suddenly descended on the Middle East. I mean, it's quite amazing. We have, you know, they're now talking to Iran, and they're getting, and of course, an extension of that is the first round of peace talks over the Yemeni situation has now been successfully concluded. Assad, the Syrian ruler, is going to visit Riyadh shortly. And Bahrain and Qatar, who broke off diplomatic relations, are restoring diplomatic relations. Suddenly, with the Americans out, peace returns. I mean, what a miracle. Now, the Americans don't like this. I'm sorry, I'm talking about your nation. But, you know, we're backing you on this, so we're complicit as well. You have the Fifth Fleet in the Indian Ocean. The attack submarine USS, what's it called? Ulysses, I think it is, has gone through Suez and apparently is expected to go into the Gulf. On top of that, William Burns, who's the CIA director, flew over to Riyadh to find out what the hell's going on. I think he was trying to find where, you know, long established intelligence links with Saudi Arabia, you know, what is, you know, where are we in this now? I think was his obvious question. And I think that what the American Fifth Fleet is doing is it's readying itself for a potential attack on Iran. Now, if they do that, they will find that everybody in the Middle East will be against them. This idea that you could divide and rule, which is the previous policy, it no longer works. They're now all on the same side. You attack Iran, and you will find that Saudi Arabia is against you as well. Now, you may not care, but I mean, the point is that it's not going to achieve anything. And so on that basis, I actually don't think that your military leaders will be stupid enough to do anything. But you can see they're trying to ratchet up the attention. So that, I think, is probably the most important point on the geopolitical scene that is driving the dollar out of its role, if you like, as the reserve currency of the world. The internal considerations, as far as America is concerned, I think center on the fragility of the banking system. Foreigners have an awful lot of dollars. If you take both their long-term investments, by which we mean investments with a time horizon of more than a year, and add to that their bank deposits and their short-term T-bills maturing in less than a year and commercial bills maturing in less than a year, you're looking at about $31.5 trillion of financial interest owned by foreigners in US dollars. And this is a very substantial number. And this number is bound to be spooked by developments in the banking system. I mean, it's not just the Silicon Valley Bank, but you can see that the response of the authorities has been destabilizing, to say the least. I mean, when you start talking about not every bank is going to be rescued, you know, we've got to look at moral hazard. When you start talking about, you know, only the too big to fail are going to be rescued. What you're doing is you're creating a flight of deposits out of the weaker regional banks and even some of the decent regional banks into the JP Morgans and the, you know, and the Citibanks and all the rest of it.
Right, right. In fact, Janet Yellen in testimony before Congress being grilled on that exact point from the representative from Oklahoma was actually saying it was because we deemed it to be systemically important. And that was the discrimination point rather than. So it's kind of an arbitrary to be determined decision made by this select group of individuals in the future on a case-by-case basis of whether an individual bank that's in trouble is systemically important or not.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, as to systemically important, there are something, I think it's something like 29 systemically important banks around the world. These are designated as such under Basel regulations, and they have to carry capital buffers and all the rest of it. So, you know, if you're just saying, well, we're definitely going to rescue them, but as for the others, you know, ooh, we're not so sure about that, then what you're going to do is you are going to create a run on the banks. And that basically is the problem. Now, if the run on the banks was limited to American nationals, residents domiciled in America, then, you know, that's one thing. But when you've got $31 trillion of foreign investment in dollars, that's a completely different thing. They're sitting there watching this, getting more and more scared, if you like, of what they've got in dollars, and thinking that, and these are countries. I mean, remember, 81 official delegations attended Vladimir Putin's international forum in St. Petersburg last June. And they heard him say, why hold dollars? Why hold euros? At that time, I think the you know, sort of Fed funds rate was something like 3%. And I think that the official CPI rate of inflation was running at 6.5% or something like that. You're saying, why hold these things when you're into a guaranteed loss? And why hold them when the Americans can just decide to disenfranchise your dollar holdings at the stroke of a pen? They can close you down on SWIFT. And so everybody has been forewarned that having dollar reserves and euro reserves, because he mentioned euros in exactly the same sentence, there is been forewarned that this is not a good idea. Get rid of them. And he furthermore said, your gold reserves, if you've got them stored in London or New York or whatever, get them out. Get them out into your control. So this is, I mean, they've already been warmed up on this. And now we find that we have got a crisis developing in the Western Alliance, because it's not just American banking system. And we've already seen Credit Suisse, God bless it. We've got the British banks, which are horribly exposed all the way around the world. The Japanese banks, which are even more leveraged than the American ones, almost twice as much, incidentally. And also the euro areas, the euro systems banks. And we just don't stop there. We look at the central banks. They're all insolvent as well. They're all in negative equity. I mean, like, big time negative equity. Now, imagine you're a foreigner and you have got dollar interest and you're sitting here looking at this. And at the same time, you're looking at what China is doing. China is growing in its economy in a way which is completely independent of this mess. So what are you going to do? Are you going to insist that you're going to hang on to your dollars and not have yuan? Alternatively, are you going to say to yourself, well, what's the point? What's the point of us having these reserves? We could just have, you know, some gold reserves and rely on bank credit to settle trade, because settling trade is self-extinguishing anyway. So we don't actually need these reserves. So immediately we can see that it's not going to take much to tip an avalanche of selling against the dollar, and for that matter, against the euro and the yen and sterling. But where what's interesting is where they settle down relative to each other. And while most people would think that the dollar's position is sacrosanct, no, it is not. It is overrun by foreigners to a far greater extent than they own the other currencies.
So can you describe to us, maybe so that ordinary person can understand, how this will likely play out if, in fact, there's a move to dump foreign currency or foreign assets by both Americans and international holders of dollars, and there's this imbalance that you describe, how this will be, if the effects of that will be seen, or the effects of that will be felt by ordinary people?
Well, working off your US Treasury's tick figures, we learn that In terms of bank deposits and short-term money, as it were, which is really defined as anything maturing in less than a year. So things like US T-bills, commercial bills, that sort of thing. That totals over $7 trillion. This is owned by foreigners. $7 trillion of your money supply is effectively owned by foreigners. So if they start selling, you've got to ask yourself, well, who's going to buy the dollars? Well, obviously, the people who buy the dollars are US residents, because that's the way it happens. I mean, if you sell, you know, you deal with the bank. You sell your dollars in the market in return for currency. Your dollars get credited to, you know, the broker or the foreign exchange dealer or the bank or whatever it is on the one side. And you will be provided in exchange with the foreign currency, which you have chosen to buy. So what we're looking at is the relationship between the ownership of liquid dollars in the hands of foreigners compared with liquid foreign currencies in the hands of US residents. Now, this is bad news because the ratio is about 18 and a half times. What I mean by that is that over 7 trillion of foreign-owned dollars is backed by only 384 billion of US-owned foreign currencies. That is the pool of foreign currencies which will absorb that 7 trillion of dollars. And so you can see that just looking at the short term at the moment, the longer term story is a slightly different thing. But if looking at the short term effect, you can see that without the Exchange Stabilization Fund, the Federal Reserve Board or the US Treasury coming in and dealing, without you know, your very close friends like the Bank of England, the Bank of Japan, the ECB, the Swiss National Bank, with whom the Fed has swap arrangements, which they will increase, I'm sure, so that those foreign banks take the losses on their nose by buying dollars in the market to try and support it. I mean, basically, the dollar, when, you know, if you start getting selling by foreigners, then it's going to fall very, very rapidly. It really is.
Now, we have precedent for that, do we not, of like the Bank of Japan or others mopping up unwanted either dollars or US treasuries?
Yes, indeed. Well, treasuries are slightly different. We're just looking at the currency effect for the moment. And, you know, it's going to require that sort of support operation to stop the dollar really crashing. Of course, you know, you're a foreigner, you're sitting here watching this, you're seeing this, and I tell you, it'll make you more frightened of the whole situation. You're not going to suddenly turn round and think, oh, I love the Fed, I think they're wonderful, they get it all right, the whole thing is great. Oh, but look at their balance sheet, they're deep into negative equity. Do I really want to be part of this? It's not going to stop them selling. And so I think we've got a situation where the rising interest rates, which are bound to accompany the fall in the dollar against other currencies, against gold, against commodities, whatever, the rise in interest rates, I think, is going to create a negative feedback loop whereby the higher the interest rates go, the worse the outlook is for the dollar. Because what it's done is it then crashes the markets. And it also screws up government financing, the financing of the government deficit big time. This brings me on to my second point. We now look at the long-term investments held by foreigners. Now, here we're talking about $24 trillion worth of US treasuries, corporate bonds, and equities. I mean, a lot of this is portfolio effect. The ownership of foreign long-term investments by US residents is about $14 trillion. So the relationship on the long side doesn't look quite so bad when you look at it at first. But bear in mind that if we get the rise in interest rates, which is bound to happen because credit is contracting, the price of credit, therefore, is rising. This is not something that the Fed actually has any control over anymore. And I think that's an important point, which everybody's got to understand. This is getting away from the central banks. They no longer control the situation. With rising interest rates, you're going to get collapsing markets. So you're going to get a general repatriation, if you like, of wealth, reserves, however you like to put it, investments, back into domestic currencies. You're bound to, because if you're a foreigner, doesn't matter what you're foreign to, but you know, you're going, you account in your own currency. And the one thing you don't want is another currency risk on top of an investment risk. So what do? You get rid of the currency risk. You come out of dollars. Or if you're an American, you come out of euros or Japanese investments or whatever it might be where you have elsewhere. Now, it doesn't look quite so bad, that sort of 24.5 trillion to 14 trillion relationship. But bear in mind that when the foreigners sell, they sell in dollars and they end up with dollars. And if they're already not wanting dollars, then they're going to sell those dollars as well. It's different the other way around. An American selling foreign investments, in most cases, and I think it's quite hard to find cases where this is not really true, those investments are held in American depository receipts. In other words, they're dealing in dollars in foreign securities, not in foreign currency and foreign securities. So when you liquidate your investment, say in, I don't know, let's say an unfortunate bank like Deutsche Bank or something like that, then you're not doing a foreign exchange transaction at all. You're not, whereas the foreigner is. So again, what we're looking at is a ratio of foreign dollar credit to US ownership of investments, and probably working out at the same relationship roughly that we detect between bank deposits and the foreign currency equivalents that American citizens or American residents have. And that is, I mean, basically the selling of dollars outweighs probably 20 to 1 American purchases of foreign currencies. So where is the foreign currency going to come from? The only place it can really come from, as I say, is central banks. The big five, if you like, the Fed, the ECB, Bank of Japan, the Bank of England, and the Swiss National Bank clubbing together to manage foreign exchange markets. Now, just imagine, the numbers we're talking about are enormous. $31.5 trillion is almost 1.5 times your GDP. That's what we're talking about absorbing somehow. And behind all this is something that was never, ever conceived. And that is that the foreigners, you know, would all at the same time decide they don't want to hold dollars. You know, I mean, before, what happened before? I think Gaddafi proposed a Central African currency backed by gold. He came to a sticky end. Before him, you had Saddam Hussein, who was proposing a gold-backed real. He came to a sticky end. That is the way in which, dare I say it, America has enforced the dollar's reserve position on the world. How many military bases have you got around the world? I mean, I don't know what the number is, but we're talking about huge numbers. I mean, the presence, military presence around the world is absolutely staggering. And if it's not military, you've got intelligence presence virtually in every country. And we're talking about operators who are very skilled at destabilizing governments. So this is something nobody has had the courage to do what they're doing now. But the thing is that everybody is doing it, and it's impossible for the Americans to stop it. I mean, this is reality of the situation. I think as to the point about timing, I do think that the banking crisis in America is not over by any means. I think that we have a pause. I noticed that the 6-month or 3-month U.S. money is 5.2% or something. I mean, it's, you know, this is the highest it's been for years and years and years and years. And that is the funding basis for banks which actually bought long-dated stock when the yield curve was positive. It is now, you know, severely negative. And banks with investments are bleeding. And where they have this stuff as collateral, the collateral has lost value. This is not a good situation. And as I say, what's driving interest rates is not all this sort of forecast. Well, inflation's coming down. With, you know, it's going to go back to 2%, whatever, whatever. I mean, look, forget it. That's got nothing to do with it. It's the contraction of credit. And when you have a contraction of credit, what happens is that the price of that credit, which we call interest rates, starts rising. Why? Because you've got desperate borrowers who are still desperate to borrow, but there's less credit available. Banks will not lend. They want to claw in their balance sheets. And as far as the regional banks in America are concerned, the squeeze is being put on them so badly by the authorities dithering and not admitting that their primary function is to secure the deposit base for the whole of the US banking system, without fear or favor, to ensure that that is secured. That is number one priority. Instead, they're dithering around talking about moral, you know, moral hazard, and, you know, we're not going to rescue every bank. I mean, they've got confused by the whole of this bail-in, bail-out thing. And it's not just in America. We've got the same thing in Britain. I mean, this is now a topic du jour. So you can see that I don't see this working out well. I really don't. I think there's so much confusion. The central banks are all deeply in negative equity, and nobody seems to think that's a problem. Oh, they can just print their way out of it. No, they can't. I mean, I know how to recapitalize a central bank, but to do it at a time when you've got to prop up the whole of the commercial banking network is not the best timing. No. And I can tell you that there is no way that the ECB can recapitalize itself because of its structure. The Bank of Japan is so far down the hole. I mean, it's just absolutely unbelievable. So we are actually staring the bankruptcy of the whole fiat currency system in the face. And that, I'm afraid, DK, is where we are.
Well, Alistair, you've often given us a concern about the system and about banking and about the currencies. You've certainly underscored that here, and it's certainly being in the backdrop of current events that are unfolding as you've predicted they would. The timing is the tricky part, and it can come in bursts, and we certainly saw a burst of multiple bank failures about a month ago and a little bit of a pause here. But as you're pointing out, the stability of the system is still worse than ever. And we're going to appreciate your presence here with us going forward to keep us appraised. And you thank you for bringing up that additional topic today of this enormous imbalance in holdings of U.S. currency versus foreign currency and how that can be a trigger point for a flood of foreign holding of U.S. dollars to come available. We've been hearing about that for some years. People talked about it as a tsunami of dollars coming home, and it's been difficult for people to understand how that could happen, but it sounds like we're getting closer to that moment by the day, by the week. So appreciate your presence here with us. If people want to follow your weekly writings, where should they get connected?
Well, I write on every Thursday for Gold Money. So goldmoney.com, hit the research tab. And the article that I'm drafting for this Thursday, which we're recording this on a Tuesday, is about the impact of dollar liquidation. So listeners to this might like to look at that article to try, I hope I give them a greater understanding of what actually is involved. And I also do a market report on precious metals, which comes out on Friday.
Well, we're very grateful for your presence here always. Your background as a bank director gives you insight into the understanding of how banks work and what they're doing right, what they're doing wrong, and the risks that we're all subject to because of that right now. And we're grateful for you joining us always here on Liberty and Finance. So thank you.
That's very much my pleasure.
Miles Franklin Precious Metals is one of America's oldest and most trusted bullion dealers. Miles Franklin is A-plus rated and accredited by the Better Business Bureau, licensed and bonded, and has zero complaints ever registered. Here at Liberty and Finance, we are licensed brokers with Miles Franklin. To order, simply call us, discuss your needs, and we can let you know our live inventory, prices, and availability, and lock in your order over the phone. Once your order is locked, the price is held for you regardless of market fluctuations, and the metals are reserved for you awaiting your settled payment. Within one business day of ordering, you will receive an email invoice detailing the order and payment instructions. Miles Franklin accepts payments by bank wire, ACH or electronic check, money order, check mailed priority mail, and cryptocurrency. The fastest forms of payment are bank wire and cryptocurrency. Upon settled payment, metals will ship out within 3 to 5 business days. You will receive tracking information via email. Domestic shipping charges are $15 for any order under 500 ounces of silver or 10 ounces of gold. For orders larger than that, domestic shipping is free. The package will be boxed, fully insured, and labeled discreetly, with no indication of the contents inside. For your privacy, the name Miles Franklin will not even be on the package. To talk to myself, Kaiser, my brother Elijah, or my father Dunnigan, call 1-888-81-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-815-4237.